Welcome to another of Blind Like Me. I'm Phil Parr. This show is being recorded on the, what is this, the 20th of January, 2005. And I think this is show 105 for our little series called The Blind Handyman. Our guest is a lady named Amy Rule from Boston, Mass. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. You live up there with Tim and Cheryl and... let's see, I did another lady up there named Melissa Garsite. Do you know her?
Yes, I do.
I know
all of them, actually.
She's a singer, and we played some of her music on the show here. And you have lived in Boston all your life, or tell us where about yourself, a little about your history.
I actually grew up about 100 miles west of Boston in a little town called Longmeadow, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to Boston when I came for graduate school. Until that time, I had gone to school and then to college in Western Massachusetts.
But you were a Massachusetts girl all your life.
Yes.
Huh? Yes. And you said that we always start with the early childhood days. First of all, what is your level of vision?
I have no vision, no light perception.
Nothing.
I was born with what they now call ROP, formerly RLF.
Uh-huh.
So I was 2.5 months premature and was not supposed to make it.
Yeah, so was I. But here we are.
Exactly.
And I guess nowadays, on medical technology, they do even more of that. I mean, you could be 5 months premature and maybe make it. Anyway, and so your level of vision is zero. Have you ever had any vision?
No, I've never had any vision at all.
Never been able to see anything?
Nope.
Well, we have something in common. I never have either. I don't know. They can tell me about red and blue all day long. I have no idea what they're talking about. And you don't either. Right. So as a young child, do you have brothers and sisters?
I have one sister who's a couple of years older than I am.
Uh-huh.
I'm the youngest of two. And I grew up in a small town in Western Massachusetts. And it was sort of interesting. When my mother would bring me with her to attend school functions that my sister was involved in, initially the school system would say, oh, you know, there are special schools for your other daughter.
Oh.
And, but my mother really wasn't very interested in having her child go 100 miles away, which is where the School for the Blind is located, of course,
sure.
Perkins in Watertown.
Yeah.
So she began to fight for me to stay within the public school system, if at all possible. So I had my first school experience. I went to a regular nursery. They called them nursery schools in those days. Now, of course, they're called preschools.
Yeah.
I went to a regular preschool and program. Had a great time there. And that was my trial to see how well I would do.
Yeah.
And since I survived there, and did just fine, they decided to start me in the regular public school system. And once they got over the fear that they had of having a blind child, because I was the first blind child ever in the school system, everything worked out fairly well.
And so you never attended, although it is a wonderful school, Perkins?
Right. No, I never did.
Although we hear a lot about it, and I think it is a wonderful place for blind children to get an education. Your mother opted to what a wonderful, I would like to say I wish my mom had done that, but then this was 1946 and there wasn't much, public school probably wouldn't have taken me, to begin with.
I think had I lived in a different community, it would have been much harder. And I think had I not done well in the nursery school, I was quickly assimilated. I only had problem with one child, and the child I had difficulty with, I locked in a closet.
Well, that'll do it.
So, I think I think I was fortunate in that the school system in which we, in the town in which we lived, they were frightened, but they weren't totally closed off to it. And I had certainly an unorthodox education in that there was no teacher of the visually impaired. There were no special ed services in my area. So it really required tremendous commitment on my mother's part. She and a volunteer from town were one lesson ahead of me in Braille, and that's how I learned. And when I was seven, I learned to type, taught by the same people.
Yeah.
So it was unorthodox, to be sure, but it worked.
So your mother learned Braille so she could teach you Braille, of
yes.
course.
Yes, she took a Braille transcription course and was one lesson ahead of me, and then a volunteer from town who later worked for the school system also did that so she could supplement my instruction when I was in class.
And other than that, they just had you in regular classes with regular kids.
Right.
Normal, quote, unquote, children. So you weren't around. The only disadvantage to that would be you weren't around any other blind people at all, period.
That was true during the school year. When I was 7 years old in the summer, I started attending a camp for the blind in New Hampshire, Camp Allen, and a camp for blind girls. And so I did have exposure to other blind people during the summer.
Okay, so you met some other blind children.
Sure.
Which is good. We talk endlessly on this show about the experience of a child going to blind school or going to public school, and we've debated it. I have no answers whatsoever. Lots of questions.
I think it depends upon the individual person. I think for me, the benefits of going to a public school with sighted peers were tremendous, in that I learned very early to be comfortable and to make other people comfortable with my blindness. And I learned to adapt and to innovate, which I think is essential for success.
Yeah.
And I think for me the benefits were invaluable. I don't know that would be true for everybody. I think it's an individual decision.
Because after all, it is a sighted world. We are required to interact and react and be with mostly sighted people, or most of us are, unless you work in some sort of an organization that employs only blind people. Most of the people you know are sighted.
That's
so, yeah, and it was good. And I've talked to people who did well both ways, who enjoyed blind school, had a good time. I've talked to people in public school that felt isolated in public school. So it's you're right. It depends on the individual. Did you how were your grades in school? How did you do academically?
I was very fortunate. I did very well in school. I was, in the top of my class much of the time.
Yeah.
The only class that I really struggled with was advanced, when I got into advanced mathematics, trying to do trigonometry and calculus from a tape was a real stretch.
Yes, it would be. I guess it would be. Were there any Braille books for you?
We had Braille books. There were some Braille books available, particularly in the elementary grades. But once I got into secondary school, because I was in advanced and honors classes much of the time, many of the books were not available.
Yeah.
So in Braille. And of course, we didn't have all of the wonderful technology that we had today, because we're talking about the 1960s here.
Yeah.
So I got books on reel-to-reel tape from Recordings for the Blind. Uh-huh. My mother did a lot of reading, and I also employed, one of the things that I learned to do when I was in high school is that I employed sighted readers to get prepared for going to college.
Okay, so you had people read you the material. I don't think I've asked you this. What size of town are we talking about that you were at school in?
15,000.
So really small.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody knew everybody really in towns
right.
that size.
Right.
And when I first moved here, my town was that size. That's all changed now. That's 40,000 people here now. In high school, how did high school go for you? What did you do in high school?
High school, I think for many people, both blind and sighted, high school was not a great experience for me. one of the things that happened, I had a lot of friends, and I certainly participated. I was very active musically when I was in middle school, what they now call middle school. We used to call it junior high. When I was in middle school, I was involved in about 7 different singing groups, and I also played the guitar and so forth. So I was that was really my foray. That was the way to level the playing field a bit, because although I participated in physical education and did as much of that as I could do. My real integration point was music. And I was also involved in some political clubs in high school and so forth. But the blindness and the realities of the prejudices around blindness came crashing in during high school in 2 ways. One was that I had made a very exclusive high school group which traveled around the country to perform in by a blind audition, in which they didn't know who you were until afterwards and after they voted on your acceptance. And I was accepted as a freshman, which was fairly unusual. But then the musical director decided that he didn't want a blind person in his group because I couldn't read Braille music. I had never learned. And he decided that since I couldn't sight read, he didn't want to let me do that. And in those days, as forward-thinking as my mother was in certain ways, the message given was you have to understand that a lot of sighted people just don't get it, and you have to accept this and move on. So I think that was a blow for me, certainly, and limited some of my participation. The dating in high school was minimal. I think, you know, most sighted guys didn't know what to do with themselves, never mind try to square this with dealing with somebody who was a little different. So I didn't do much dating in high school. But I was certainly active. I took a lot of courses. I really loved academics. I was one of those strange people who took, you know, 6 4-credit courses instead of the 4 that were required.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, let's just get back to this musical group that traveled around, and this was at your school, or this was at your high school, and they had a musical group that traveled around and entertained different groups and organizations. Am
right.
I right on
right.
track so far?
Yes.
And you auditioned blind with this. In other words, they heard you play and sing or do whatever you did.
They
didn't know who you were. And the guy said, "Oh, she's great. I'd like to have her." And then he found that you were blind and wouldn't accept you. I'm going to have to kill him. That's terrible. That's a terrible blow for a 15, 16-year-old girl.
Yeah, I was 14. It was pretty nasty.
It was.
But, you know, I learned some things from that experience. And, you know, I think one of the things that is a reality for most people who are blind is that we are going to encounter some prejudices, certainly job discrimination and so forth. And it's not a nice pill to swallow, but it's an unfortunate reality.
Live with it. Get over it. It's going to happen to you in the... I can remember going to a radio station and telling the guy, "Look, I'll work for 2 weeks for nothing. If you don't like what I do, I'll leave."
Right.
And I ended up managing the station.
Right.
because I knew what I knew. He didn't know it, but you have to do things like that if you're a blind person. So high school was not, of course, high school, like you said,
for
a lot of I've got a niece and a granddaughter who just got out of high school, and all during all the BS going on with girls boycotting you and not deciding they didn't like you and being with this clique and that clique, I told them, once high school's over, that's all of that.
Right.
Life is like that if you let it be, but you don't have to worry about the, you know, it's not nearly as important to date or be popular.
Right.
So, but you got through high school and you did music. Now, you play guitar and sing.
Mm-hmm.
You finger pick or straight pick or what do you?
Both.
You do both?
Yeah.
And I bet you write songs.
I used to. I haven't done that in a long time, but I used to.
Oh, don't ever quit. Do you have a gut string guitar somewhere in your house? Get it out tonight and open a Jack's beer and sit and play it. I recommend it. It's great therapy. Has been, or it has been for me. And you, of course, this was, as you said, in the 60s. So you probably even remember Joan Baez, don't you?
Oh, sure. Oh, sure.
Diamonds and Rust is my favorite album in the world. Mm-hmm. I, at one time, learned every song on that album. Because the 60s was a great time for that sort of
picking. Absolutely. Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Oh, yeah.
And Trio, and Joan Baez, and all that. Yeah, exactly.
All this Bob Dylan, mm-hmm. even under Bob Dylan. What other instruments do you play? Is that all, guitar?
I've never taken lessons. I do play the piano by ear.
Uh-huh.
But I've not... I took guitar lessons for a number of years, but other than that, that's the only instrument that I've actually formally learned.
Yeah, was it you were taught some guitar?
Mm-hmm.
Which is always good, because there's so many ways to make a chord, and there's one right way and one way that will speed you on to the next thing you want to do. So you need to learn those things. Were you ever forced or by choice made a living playing music, or did you? Has it always been just for fun?
It's the only way in which I ever made a living playing music was I did some babysitting in high school, but I made some money since I couldn't get a lot of the traditional jobs, you know, like slinging hamburgers and so forth. I used to teach guitar lessons. I used to give kids guitar lessons.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I made a little money at that when I was in high school. But no, music has always been an avocation for me rather than a vocation.
Yeah.
I initially thought I might want to be a writer because I was English was a particular forte of mine. But I decided against that because I wasn't sure I could make a consistent living at it.
Oh, you might or might not. In music, it would be the same way.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You might be able to do something, but it's much better as a hobby than it is as a something to try to make a living with. Now, you say you alluded to some babysitting in high school.
Yes.
A kind of progressive, you were talking about the 60s, of a couple deciding to leave their 7-year-old child with a blind girl.
I actually babysat usually for children who were much younger than that.
Uh-huh.
I had a couple of neighbors for whom I babysat, and my math teacher, who had young children, I babysat for him. I think one of the things that happened for me, and it wasn't universal by any means, but unfortunately... in some ways, and I suppose this is better than being the pitiable blind person, but I became the amazing blind person, which I hate, the label which I really abhor.
Oh, I love it.
So, you know, people thought I could do anything.
Yep.
So it was almost as if they were almost not acknowledging my blindness in one sense.
Mm, yeah. Because you were the amazing Amy Rule.
Yeah.
That's good. That's better
in their minds only.
Well, it's better than the other way. It's better than you know, there are blind people who prey on their blindness to get sympathy and pity.
Right.
And
no, you're right. It's better than the other way. Although, actually, I think it's two sides of the same coin, because I think whether a person is seen as pitiable or amazing, what that still says is that being blind is not okay. That if you're amazing, it means that if you do normal things and you're a blind person, you have to be amazing, because the norm in being a blind person would be that you couldn't do those things. So I actually see them as two sides of the same coin.
But don't you think when I meet somebody new, when somebody calls me and says, Mr. Park, would you dub a cassette to a CD for me? And I say yes. And they come by. For the first few minutes, they're... blindness is all they're thinking about.
Yes.
With me.
Yes.
And then eventually that kind of, you know, I've told people I'll sure be glad when the most important thing about me for you is the fact that I'm blind. Let's get over it.
Yeah.
Get past it. I'm just Phil. And so those are easier to get by, I think, than the pity party blind people.
Although I still think a lot of people who see you as, or me or anybody else, as an amazing blind person, I'm not sure they're really over it. I mean, I think it's better than the alternative, but I still think you're seen in a different category.
You're right, and as something different. However, at 65, I kind of like being the amazing blind person. Okay, getting off to it. If you want to think I'm amazing, it's damn all right with me.
Well, see, what I say is I'm amazing. I may be amazing in some way or other, but it has nothing to do with blindness.
Yeah, so. That's true. That's true. I do a lot of things that have nothing to do with blindness. And we could talk endlessly about we, because we don't have any sensory perception through our eyes, so there's a lot of room up there to store facts and knowledge and things. But let's don't get into that. Let's take a little break, and we want to get back and get you into college and see what you did after high school. Our guest is Amy Rule from Boston, Mass. Back in a minute with more Blind Like Me. Hang on.
Serve.
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman List, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the Handyman List, and it worked.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman List, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman List, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line. Stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Well, the whole point of the Blind Handyman show is blind people have as many plumbing problems and household repairs to do as sighted people do, but we can't do them exactly the same way sighted people do, so we need some input from other blind people to find out how they do household repairs, so we formed this, Blind Handyman, and we got a list going. And as far as Blind Like Me is concerned, we want to use it as an educational tool. As I remember being a young adult, a young person, and thinking, well, I want a nice house and kids and a good job, but how am I going to do that? And I had no idea. And I think the Blind Like Me show demonstrates the fact that it can be done even if you are blind. That's not a handicap. It can be done.
If you would like to be a guest on either show, or you can suggest someone as a guest, email us at blindhandyman@hotmail.com or blindlikeme@txucom.net.
Well, so far, it's been a labor of love. Hello there, it's Phil Parr coming into your homes with the Blind Like Me. Amy Rule is our guest from Boston, Mass. It's January, so it's cold and snowy up there. Do you listen to the Car Talk guys? Do you listen to Click and Clack on NPR?
No, I don't.
People in Boston don't, do they? We do all over the nation. I love them. We model our little show called Blind Like Me sort of after them. All right, we've got you high school, graduated from high school, did it in 12 years?
Yes, the normal 12 years.
Just the normal 12 years. Walked across the stage. Did you walk across the stage or not?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Walked across the stage.
Yeah, there.
Got my diploma. Unfortunately, because I was the amazing blind person, got the darn standing ovation, just because I could walk and chew gum at the same time.
Ah, yeah, that's okay. Get over that. It's all right. You can be the amazing blind. You're old enough now to be the... At 17, it was pretty embarrassing to be the amazing blind person. You just, I just wanted to hide somewhere. But I wanted to take a girl with me when I hid. Let's see. Out of high school, then you had to make some decisions. Then life begins to work for you. You got to decide what you're going to do.
Exactly. I back in those days, Massachusetts allowed people who were blind to go to any college in the state that they could get into, and we got scholarships to go. So I was very lucky in that regard. Applied to a batch of schools. And ended up, and that was sort of an interesting process, too, trying to figure out where to apply and so forth. But that's a process similar to that for anybody,
sure.
except that I went for a lot of college interviews, where many kids didn't in those days. And that was because I wanted to both be able to ask some questions, but also to try to break down some of the stereotypes,
sure.
About blindness. I ended up going to Smith College, which is a women's school in Northampton, Mass. I didn't go to the school because it was a women's school. I went to the school because it had a good reputation. So I started there.
And at this time, you were still thinking journalism, or were you? What were you?
No, by that time, I'm one of those people who, for years, everybody always came to with their problems and difficulties. So I decided if people were going to seek my advice, I better learn to be good at it. So I wanted to go into social service. So I double majored in sociology and psychology with a minor in English.
Really?
Yeah.
So you decided at that time to be a psychologist.
To be a social worker, yeah, or a psychologist. I wasn't sure what
you And you did, you started that major, and it worked out fine for you.
Yes, it did. I had to kind of fast track it a bit because I was concerned that there was some question about whether the scholarship monies were going to remain intact.
Uh-huh.
So I sped it up and I graduated in 3 years instead of four.
Well, you said didn't you say that the state would pay for your college no matter where you wanted to go?
In Massachusetts, yes. If I stayed in Massachusetts.
Oh, but you didn't.
No, I did. But there was a question once I was in college about whether those monies were going to be still available.
Oh.
And for how long.
Yeah.
So I sped it up and graduated from college in 3 years.
And did it in 3 years.
Yeah. Went in the summer and took some courses at other schools during the summers to make sure I got all my credits and accelerated when I was at college. Had a great time at college, both in the classroom and out of it. Had some wonderful opportunities. Was able to be a teaching assistant. Made a lot of friends. Had a really good time. I think relaxed a lot. When I was in high school, I was pretty driven academically, and although the academic program I was in was quite rigorous in college, I was very lucky. I'd had a great foundation. So I was able to have a lot of fun.
And did you find that the stereotype of the amazing or the pitiful blind person or the feeling sorry for or the non-acceptance of blind people, it was much better in college?
It was better. We I was privileged to go to school with Martin Luther King's oldest daughter. And she and I were in the same philosophy class, and I remember we quipped that we better sit together because everybody else initially was having eye strain because they didn't know who to stare at more, her or me. I think most people with whom I went to school had never seen a blind person up close, and so there was some initial reservation. But that quickly broke down, in part, I think, because of two sort of humorous incidents.
Okay.
One was that we had fire drills at different hours, and we lived in houses, not huge dorms, but houses. So my house, for example, had 68 kids in it, and I was up on the fourth floor, and it's a walk up. Of course, there were no elevators. Well, at 2 o'clock in the morning, the fire alarm went off, and you had to get out within 3 minutes. I was in the shower on the fourth floor, and I made it out of the building, dripping in my robe, before some of the kids from the second floor. So I think that kind of gave my housemates a sense that I was okay.
Yeah.
And then we had a wonderful tradition at Smith called Mountain Day, in which the bell, on a day that's unannounced, the bell will ring at 6:30 in the morning, and that says there are no classes that day, everybody go and play.
Really?
And yeah, it's a tradition. And I had been asked to go out and go boating with some people, and I was going to go do that. But some kids were taking care of a cat, which unfortunately got into my room, went to the bathroom on my bed,
made
a general mess of things, and I just took it in stride and did what I needed to do, and laughed it off and dealt with it. And so I think those two incidents really made a difference.
If they didn't put the other kids at ease, they did you, which is important.
Yeah.
They you always help, when you're in a crowd, you always hope, gee, I hope the lights go out. Because then I'll be, they'll need me then. But it's terrible. Anyway, college was good for you. You had a good time in college.
I did. I had a good time.
Yeah. Plus, you played guitar. You sang.
Yeah, I did play guitar. I did some of that. I worked in the summers. I was doing some research in the summers, and some work, and that was great for me too. I learned. You know, I took buses and so forth for the first time. I had not had much mobility training, but I was pretty adventurous, and so I took buses and did some work. The first summer it was volunteer. The second summer it was paid.
Mm-hmm.
So I had lots of experience. I also did a lot of dating in college.
Really, you found those boys were a little more. They figured they could handle a blind girl.
Yeah. I dated some sighted people, and I dated some blind people.
So. Oh, there were some other blind people in the college?
No. They were people who went to different schools, but whom I'd met in various venues.
Yeah. But you say you had very little mobility training.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was one of the downsides about going to public school in an area where there wasn't much available in terms of mobility instruction.
Yeah.
I never really used a cane until I was about 18. I took the. I lived in a small town, as I said, and I could. I used the cane to get to walk to elementary school, and I took the regular bus to high school, and to junior high school. I used the cane in school to some extent, but our school was pretty crowded, so it would have been, frankly, pretty difficult because we were overcrowded to be
swinging
able to maneuver with it. Yeah.
Cane around, knocking Presbyterians in the water. And I never had any mobility training, and I went everywhere in the world. They just didn't do it when I was a kid. So it's people complain about, well, I don't have enough mobility training. Well, I don't either, but I did. You know, I was adventurous like you, and I did fine, and so did you. And so you, in your small town, or you could walk lots of places. You could walk to the grocery store without a cane.
Well, walking to the grocery, I was a mile from the nearest grocery store, so I must say I didn't do that. If I wanted to go to the grocery store, I used to ride when I was really little. I rode a regular bike around my neighborhood, but when I got older and wanted to go farther, I would hop on my tandem bike with friends of mine and go to the grocery store, or sometimes we'd go into town.
But when you were little, when you were little, you rode a regular bike around your neighborhood.
I
love it. That's great. And your mother let you do that. Bless her heart.
My mother was scared to death. My poor mother. I've probably taken years off her life.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, she did wonderful for you.
She did. You know, it's interesting. My mother, she didn't know what to do with a blind child, so she treated me normally. It's probably the best gift she ever gave me.
Oh, it is, by far. Riding a bike. Of course, we've got, you know, I'm sure you've heard horror stories about kids riding a bike. You may have had a few.
Oh, sure.
But you could hear back then, and you could hear those cars when you passed them on the side of the road, and you could hear good. Well, that's wonderful. So in college, you walked everywhere, but you started using a long cane.
Yes. Yep.
And never did think about a dog? Never did?
No, you know, give me a dog I can fold up and put in my pocket and I'll think about it.
Yeah.
I love dogs. I love them. I've had a pet dog in my life, but I just, it wasn't for me. Never really wanted to do that. Don't have the kind of disciplined lifestyle either.
And they're, you know, whether you like it or not, unless you do a lot of traveling, they're a lot of trouble.
Well,
again,
I think it's kind of a personal decision, and I know a lot of people that do it successfully, but it just wasn't for me.
I know a lot of people who do it successfully, but still, you got to, you know, you're responsible for that dog, and you've got to make sure that they find a relief area and that they get fed and they get, they just, you know, no more traveling than I did. I went downtown, changed buses, and went out to work for a while, but then I figured out I could get some girl to take me if I really worked at it. And anyway... College good. So you did college in 4 years. So you're 21 now,
right?
And it's time to make some real life decisions. I tell you what, let's do. We'll get into that in a minute. Take just a little short break and be back in just a minute. Amy Rule is our guest, and show is called Blind Like Me. Hang on.
I wonder where the farm emergency is. It's somewhere over here. Oh, God, I've got my cane caught in something.
Pardon me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but the end of your cane is stuck in my...
Why bother shopping your big discount stores when you can shop from the comfort of your own home at BlindMySmart.com?
Hi, this is Dale Campbell, president of Blind My Smart. If you can't find what you're looking for today, check back tomorrow. We're adding new products every day.
Blind My Smart, with thousands of products at a completely accessible website. Our address is BlindMySmart.com. Again, that's www.BlindMySmart.com. Blind Science. Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Science, here's Tim Cummings.
Have you ever been dying to buy the latest CD that's out there, or maybe find something that's a little bit harder to find and you don't want to troll around Amazon.com and get lost in all those links? Well, then you should take a look at CD Connection. CD Connection just sells CDs, and they've got quite a large selection. The site's very accessible. I would give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. I haven't purchased anything through them, but I know a lot of people that have and say their service is very good and that they're very pleased with them. The website again is www.cdconnection.com. I'd give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 9. For Blind Sites, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sites.
Guest is Amy Rule from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm Phil Parr, and back with more of Blind Like Me. And, okay, out of high school, 21, you're right. We got 30 years to cover. Let's go. Here we go. 30 years. What did you do when you got, how did you find a job? What was your first job? How did you, what
well,
did you
no,
find?
I didn't go to find a job first. I decided to go to grad school because to be a clinical social worker, I had to go to grad school to do anything with it.
Where would you do that? Same place?
No, I could have because I did have a program, but I wanted to move to Boston. My dream had always been to live in Boston because I'm an avid professional sports fan.
Really?
And I had been going to Boston Celtics games since I was about 10 years old, and I wanted to live in Boston. I wanted to be in the city where I could get around more independently.
Mm-hmm.
That had always been a lure for me. So I came to Boston and went to graduate school at Simmons College School for Social Work. And that was a two-year program during which I both had classwork and also did internships.
Okay.
Finished that up. And then I had the... interesting experience of trying to look for a job. I graduated at the top of my class, had done extremely well, had mm-hmm. gotten excellent references, but that's again when the blindness and the impact of that in terms of discrimination really hit.
Really comes into focus when you start going to people that don't know you and don't know you're the amazing Amy Rule, and you want them to hire you.
And I think the other problem is, frankly, that in many ways the health professions are perhaps some of the worst in terms of discrimination because they have a hard time seeing you as a colleague as opposed to a person with an identified problem. So it took me... Oh.
Wait a minute. You can't just pass that.
Okay.
They have a hard time seeing you as a colleague. They think of your blindness as something you'd come to talk to them about.
Well, no, they think of you as a person with a problem. In other words, I think in this we have a lot of people for whom the medical model still applies in the health professions. So if you have an identifiable problem, that's how they focus. And they have a hard time seeing you as an equal.
And your problem, although it wasn't a problem for you, was being blind.
Right.
Well, I never thought of that. That's such a good... I'll get back to you on that. Anyway, go ahead.
so it took me, oh gosh, all my friends had jobs long before I did. It took me about 11 months, and the first job I got was probably the worst job in the world for a blind person, but they were willing to let me try it, so I did it. I was working, my first job was working in a home care corporation, and I was doing a psychiatric and service need evaluations for homebound elders. So I had to travel on foot to clients. I had a caseload of 90 clients.
And you had to travel on your own to those, to these clients?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. I'm glad I was young and foolish. I got to know, I had a particular area that I worked in. I got to know the police really well. My clients figured out because they soon, after they their initial shock, they were happy to see me. So they would were helpful to me. And for the initial few months, I definitely went on my own. When winter came, the agency that I worked for found somebody who was willing to accompany me in the ice. Because everything is, of course, ice and snow. Everything gets, the landmarks are very hidden. So I did that for about 9 months.
Now, but not only did you have to get to this person's house, but you had to learn a little bit about their house after you got in.
Yes, I did.
Whoa, I can't imagine a worse job. Good God, Almighty.
It was pretty awful. But, you know, as much as I have to say, you know, one of the things about working with people who need something and who are having difficulties is that, you know, for many of it's usually the professionals I've found in my experience. You know, the professionals are the ones that have more difficulty. If you can present yourself as a person who's interested and willing to help and able to help, most people get over the blindness pretty quickly if they're in need. So I did that, and then I went and worked a couple of years in a hospital, in a rehab and chronic disease hospital, working with elderly patients, but that just didn't work for me. It was difficult to read the medical records because they were handwritten, so I'd have to find, I found alternative ways to get the information, but it was a hassle.
Yeah, it would be.
And it wasn't the kind of work I wanted to do, so I left work, and I left that job and looked for another, and then worked, spent the next almost 21 years working in various capacities for as a psychotherapist and clinical supervisor, ultimately, for the Department of Mental Health, one of the local offices there. And there I specialized in working with trauma victims and people who were suicidal.
Okay, but let me just walk back to this. I didn't want to interrupt you, but let me walk back to this first job. You were evaluating elderly people for what reason? Were they applying for welfare? No.
They were, I did two things. One was that they needed concrete services, so they were requesting help for, I was responsible in part for determining how much homemaking assistance they needed or healthcare assistance they needed, that kind of stuff. And the other thing that I did, this was not a job actually that required my master's degree, but because I had the master's degree, what the agency then had me do was to do psychiatric evaluations.
Mm-hmm.
And then I could do some short-term treatment if I wanted, but I also was able to then make referrals. And I worked as a consultant on for other people who had clients or my own clients who had psychiatric difficulties.
So you had to determine how much home skills this person had and how much help they needed, and you're totally blind.
Right.
I want to talk to the guy who gave you that job. What the hell was he thinking?
I can tell you it was interesting, but you can, you know, there are a lot of things you can do. One of the things that growing up as I did, I think, and having gone to public school with no trailblazers ahead of me in my particular area, was that I learned to innovate. And there are lots of ways without vision that you can determine things. And
certainly.
I learned a lot of them. You know, it's amazing what you can, you know, what you can do if you have to innovate.
But this guy must have thought, she won't take this. I'll offer this insurance if you took it. And did it, you did that for 9 months. Then you worked inside a hospital for 9 months, and now we're
for 2 years.
Oh, for 2 years, and now you were actually with the job that you that was sort of your life's work, which is working for MHMR.
In the
Yeah, and suicidal people, and what else?
And trauma victims. People
really?
Have been
was that a specialty of yours, or
yes.
did you just?
Yes, that was something I was particularly interested in, and did a lot of particular work with.
And this was in an. Did you go to them?
No. This was I sometimes had to do emergency home visits, mm-hmm. but most of the time they came to the clinic in which I worked.
And so you would be you would get up and usher them into your room and sit down and talk with them.
Right.
And visit with them. So that was, you were on the same turf all the time. You knew the lay of the land. You knew mm-hmm. where the coffee tables were and the secretary was and all that
yeah.
sort of thing. I'm big on not falling over the receptionist.
Right.
I did it one time, and it was terribly embarrassing. And you did this for 20-something years.
Almost 21 years, right.
So we have you up to a middle age now. Now, I understand from another source that you have children. You're married and have children.
I do. Yep. I got married during that period. I'm married to a sighted person who I mm-hmm. met in New York. He comes from Pennsylvania.
In New York, you were in New York for a seminar.
I was in New York visiting a friend and met him, and we did the long distance relationship for a couple of years, and then he moved here.
Mm-hmm.
And I have two children. My eldest is a freshman in college, and my youngest is a freshman in high school.
Is that right? Have one of each, a boy and a girl,
one of
right?
Each, yep, one of each.
And so during this time that you were working for in the mental health field for MHMR or whatever they call it up there, you married?
I married and I had children. I worked full time the first 5 or 6 years I was in the job. And then I switched to part-time when my kids were little so that I could be home with them some days
yeah.
a week. And I actually stayed part-time because by then I was also involved in a bunch of other things.
Like what?
Well, I was late to come to the technology field, but once I started in 1996, I fell in love with technology. I became very active and eventually became president of ViBug, which is the computer user group in Boston. So I was very involved with that. I've been certified as an access technology trainer. So I do a lot of tech support, training, computer consulting on the side.
Yeah, you still do that. I mean, you do that
yeah.
now.
Yeah, I still do that. But that started about 10 years ago. I also, for several years, ran a subscription list for people who were interested in gaining information from blindness-related email lists but didn't want to plow through messages. So for a while, I was doing 1,000 messages a day and sending the best content to my subscribers. And I did that for several years. Until I switched careers, at which point I needed to stop because of the travel.
Okay, so we're out mid-40s and we're out of day-to-day MHMR or whatever it was. What did you decide to do then?
Well, actually, I don't know that it was so much that I decided as something fell into my lap. I had ViBug meets at National Braille Press.
Uh-huh.
And the folks at National Braille Press had worked with me. I'd done a bit of writing for them in a book that for a chapter in a book that they published. And I had talked with them on various occasions, and they'd seen me present when I was president of ViBug. And I was contacted one day because they were going to be starting an early literacy program in which the initial stage of which was that we were going to be sending out book bags full of children's Braille material mm-hmm. and parent resources to blind and visually impaired children around the country. And they asked me if I would be interested in something like that. It was a total surprise in one way. It was something I'd never done, and I'd never worked in the blindness field before. But it was intriguing to me because I was going to be at the ground level of a program. I'd be building, working with our IT people to build a database, doing a lot of networking, and I also thought that a lot of my skills as a therapist would be transferable. So I interviewed for the job and got it, and now that's the job that I currently hold.
And also your technology skills, your skills as a blind person, just being a blind person, your braille skills,
right.
And your psychology skills could all intertwine in this job you have now.
Exactly, and I think too, part of it, and to be honest, part of it is I had not been very involved in the blindness field, nor am I. I'm not a member of either national organization, but I had come to learn that the whole education system and the opportunities for blind kids were far different, and that than they had been for me. And so, and I was ready, although I loved my job and loved my clients. Being a therapist at some level or other for 25 years is a long time, and I was ready for something different. And I wanted, and it was time to give back a little bit. I've been very fortunate, I think, in terms of the opportunities I've had, and wanted to give back a little bit.
I understand. I had the same experience when I started doing these things. You realize, you kind of come to realize that your experience as a blind person is far better than many, many blind people.
Exactly.
And, you know, you might have something to offer. And so that is what you do now. You work at, what does National Braille Press do? I've heard of them all my life, but I know nothing about National Braille Press.
National Braille Press, since 1927, has been a printing and publishing house. We both braille mainstream books for the Library of Congress and also for purchase. And we also, and probably what makes us unique, is that we also publish books specifically designed for blind people, books by many of which are by blind authors. We have a lot of computer reference cards, computer books, books on meditation, those kinds of things, specifically written by or for blind people.
And but it's all braille.
Yes.
You do no audio.
No, we don't do audio. We are all braille, and we literally do everything on the premises. We have all of our production facilities are in Boston. We do everything from the transcription of braille to the proofreading to the production and pressing of the plates and all of that.
So how do you find out if National Braille Press would have something you wanted? Do you have a Is there a catalog? Is there an online resource base or something?
Yes, there are both, actually. We have a catalog that has many of our publications, which you can obtain. You can contact them at 800-548-7323. You can send an email to orders@nbp.org. You can go to our website, which is www.braille.com.
Really? www.braille.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I love it.
And we have, and there you'll see all the list of books that we have. We also, for children, for any of you listeners who may be blind parents, for example, we also have a Children's Braille Book Club in which we produce a book for children every month. And those are not in the catalog because they change frequently.
Huh?
But those are also available. And information about my program is also available on that website.
So this idea worked out of sending a book bag full of information for the parents and some Braille books for the children. You're still doing that?
Yes, we are. We sent out our first books and book bags in February 2003, and we've sent out almost 6,000 to date across the country, and they're for children birth through age 7. We have both English and Spanish available. The program's been very well received. I think one of the things that that surprised me that I didn't know was that a lot of people are very intimidated by Braille.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people think that it's some difficult, dark language to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, I think for parents, for many of them, the whole idea of Braille really connotes blindness, and it means that they're, for them, until they are educated, it means that they fear their child won't be able to succeed. So I think there are a lot of barriers, in addition to which, because there's so little available Braille instruction in the country because of the shortages of teachers to the visually impaired, and because some school systems believe that it's better to give a child an aid all the time or to just provide them with computer speech technology, that can replace Braille, that we're trying to make inroads into that thinking process and to educate the parents so that they can advocate for their blind and visually impaired children.
Now, your organization is not just a state organization. This is nationwide.
We're a private nonprofit.
And so somebody in South Carolina or Washington State could contact you and you would provide services for them?
Oh, sure.
Also, they might get a book bag full of goodies?
They might, sure, if their child has not yet received them and their child is birth through age 7, absolutely. We can only do one bag per child, but yes,
sure.
That's exactly right. And I should also mention National Braille Press does, as an organization, we do textbooks. We do tests for many of the states across the country in Braille. So it's quite a large Braille operation.
Okay, so it's www.braille.org.
.com.
It's give us the phone number one more time, if you don't mind.
The customer service phone number is 800-548-7323.
Well, we've killed an hour. We had to hurry, but we got it all in, didn't we? You're exactly what the kind of blind person I'm looking for, who is successful, part on their own and part because of help. But you seem to be enjoying life and having a good time, and that's what we all want to do. That's what sighted people or blind people want to do is enjoy things and feel like they're contributing something. And I think you're doing both.
Well, thank you very much.
Hold on just a minute, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Our guest has been a lady named Amy Rule.
Amy, that,
what a nice, pleasant person she is, and successful also. National Braille Press. Didn't know much about them. Maybe we'll do a show and talk about them more and get in depth what they do. Let me just real quickly. This is recorded in January 2006. We played on the 26th and 27th and 28th of January on ACB Radio. That'll be its first airing. On the 29th of January, 2006, to 7 o'clock Central Time, 8 o'clock Eastern Time, I'm going to be a guest on Marlene's call-in show on Sunday night on ACB Radio. This coming Sunday night, if it's, well, depending on when you're listening. Anyway, this coming Sunday night, the 29th of January, 2006, Phil Parr from 7 to 9 Central Time. You adjust it for yourself. 2 hours, call in, and we'll talk about, I don't know what we'll talk about, but anyway, come see us. That'll be Sunday night on ACB Radio. Thanks for listening. If you could suggest a guest or you'd like to be a guest on either show, Blind Handyman or Blind Like Me, get a hold of me, phil@philparr.net. We'll do it. phil@philparr.net. If you want to call, 936-634-9500. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.